The views expressed on the following program are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and are not necessarily those of WMEL staff, management, or advertisers.
This is Bull Talk Business Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the CEO of Bull's Marketing Solutions, Donna Anselmo.
This is Donna Anselmo, and welcome to Bull Talk Business Radio. We're so glad that you're listening today. We've got Pete Anselmo in the studio as co-host, and of course, I have been your host here for years, and we are so happy that we are on the air at AM 1060 WMEL, broadcasting from Daytona down to Palm Beaches and from the East Coast into Orlando, Florida. And so today we've been wanting to do something to help our listeners, as we do every week. We like to talk about insight strategies, tips and tools for success. And one thing that is very important in business is the ability to flex and change when you need to. So we're going to be talking about that in a little while. But first, I wanted to give a shout out to all the mothers out there who just celebrated Mother's Day. And I hope everybody had a wonderful day and a lot to celebrate with your families. And I certainly know, after having had three children, the challenge of being a mother. And then next month, we get to celebrate all the dads.
There we go. Now we're talking.
Yeah. So another thing that I wanted to let our listeners know is I looked up online some of the things that happen in the month of May, and there's a special day in May that I had never known about before, so I figure if I don't know about it, probably a lot of other people haven't heard about it either. And May has been designated as the month for recommitment. So what does that mean? It means being able to commit to your goals. So what do you think about that?
Well, I think it's a wonderful thing to recommit to your objectives and your goals. And I think we each need to take the time to do that, because one of the things that often happens, particularly with the new year, we have a resolution where we're going to do such and such. We're going to lose 20 pounds, or we're going to do this. So it's good by the fifth month of May to recommit to those objectives, and hopefully by the end of the year you will have achieved them.
So after I saw that May is recommitment month, I began to think about, well, you know, what does that really mean, and how does somebody recommit or stay committed to begin with? So you brought up the typical resolution people make every year: I'm going to lose weight. Some people might say, I'm going to manage my finances better. Some people might say, I'm going to learn how to be a better communicator, or I'm going to learn a new skill. And you get started on stuff, but you don't always follow through. So what makes the difference in follow through is what I began thinking about.
And what was that, Donna?
Well, I think it's really important to learn what motivates you, because if you don't have the staying power, if you can't hold on to the motivation, then you are going to lose steam and you're not going to stay committed to what you're going to do, because there are so many things that can pull us off track. So the first thing in order to stay motivated is to think about, what do you have to experience in your life to feel satisfied and jazzed enough to keep you going on whatever project it was that you resolved to achieve? So the first thing is, what is it that you need from this, and what outcome? So you can stay jazzed if you can stay focused on the purpose. So you look out in the distance and you say, yeah, that's something I really want. And as long as I can keep my eye on that prize, I can stay motivated. There are some people, though, who don't get motivated by that carrot out there. Some of those people need to have the whip. They need a stick behind them, tapping them forward and pressing them forward, which means a lot of times you really want outside intervention to keep you going and to keep you motivated, or you need your inner judge or your inner critic that somehow gives you the voices in your head that make you move forward, sometimes in a happy way, but sometimes in a not so pleasant way.
I think it's important then for each of us to understand just exactly what motivates us and to try to focus on those motivations in order to accomplish an objective. Because I think it's like anything else. Different people take different motivation. So it's good to understand your own motivation and to focus on those aspects that are productive for you to achieve whatever it might be that you set for yourself in terms of a goal.
Right. So when I said earlier that sometimes that inner voice is an uncomfortable voice, it's not a pleasant voice. What I'm talking about is that sometimes we are motivated by the fear that we feel. You know, like if you want to get over that fear, you've got to make a change. If you're worried that something is going to go wrong, you've got to get in there and make a plan so that the outcome doesn't end up to be disastrous. So another thing is that inner voice a lot of times makes us feel guilty. So fear, guilt, stress, anxiety, worry, even sometimes overwhelm, like we let ourselves get overwhelmed because we procrastinate, we put things off, or we take too many things on. Well, those are all patterns that we develop over time for how we solve problems and deal with conflict. So it's really important to notice the pattern, to listen for the voice in your head, and to understand what it is that pulls you off task. So is it frustration? Is it stress? Is it lack of appreciation? I know for me, I like to feel appreciated when I do something. And
you are.
Hey, Peter. appreciate me like you did on Mother's Day. Thank you so much. But we do. We want to feel appreciated. We want to feel like our efforts are worthwhile. We want to feel acknowledged and we want to feel validated. But when instead we feel criticized, or maybe there's just so much going on that we're distracted and it's hard to stay on track, what do we do? But we won't be able to do anything if we don't realize that that's the pattern that's getting in our way. So we have to observe that pattern and the patterns that pull us off track.
Right. And something that's very popular today is the notion of multitasking. And frankly, I kind of think that it's not a skill that you want to utilize all the time. I think it's important, especially if you have a given objective that you've set for yourself, instead of trying to do multitasks, it would be important to focus on the ones that you want to accomplish. And by focusing, and maybe you do small increments towards that objective, I think is more important than trying to do five different things at the same time. So well, I think I would prioritize and focus to achieve my objective.
I love that because it takes us back to what were we talking about to begin with, and it was recommitting and staying on task. So what you did was you basically said, break it down into manageable bites, because if you take on too much at once, you're only going to be able to move forward incrementally in any one area. So you have to break it down and then prioritize. And the way that I like to do that is I'm a big list maker. What are all the things that I have to do that will make an impact on getting me the result I want to make? So you start out, brainstorm with somebody, don't judge everything that you think as you kind of spit it out, but start to look at the world of possibility for how you get where you're going, how you stick with that resolution, what is it that you want to achieve, and all the different ways you can do that. And then once you start to see the discrete areas, then you make a plan and say, okay, I'm going to tackle this one first and this one, this one next. And then it's really important that you celebrate yourself every time you make progress, that you recognize, reward, and really be grateful for the progress that you've made so far. And that also means being able to manage your feelings about the process, because it's our feelings very often that trigger us and get us off track. So remember that if you want to stay committed, you really need to manage your inner voice and to get started with an understanding of you know, how much staying power you're going to have and how much you really love what you're trying to do. Because if you don't love it and you don't pour love into it, and by love I mean that real commitment to making it happen. Love means doing the work in this case. So if you don't pour the work into it, you don't pour the love, you don't show it the love, nothing is going to happen. So you've got to listen to that inner voice and give it the love and let your inner voice and train your inner voice to support you in moving forward.
And, you know, another area that's important, I think, for accomplishing an objective is to make it public. In other words, let your friends and family know that this is something that's important to you and this is something that you want to accomplish. And so by making it public, you really are calling upon the resources of your friends, your family, everyone else to support your endeavor, whatever it might be. And so I think it's good to make it public. It's not to say you have to put it on a billboard, but I'm just saying that it's good to get it out in public so that you can make it clear to everyone that this is something that you want to accomplish and you hope to bring in more people to support you in this endeavor.
I think that's really important, Pete, because when you make something public, you are making yourself accountable. You're reminding yourself that you have to be accountable in order for you to continue. So if you're not accountable and if you don't have anything to remind you or people that you see that you've, you know, committed to and said, hey, I'm going to do this, this is important to me. When you see those people again, you're reminded of what you told them. And it's another way of reinforcing what it is that you want to accomplish and your own commitment to it ongoing. You are listening to Donna Anselmo and Peter Anselmo on Bold Talk Business Radio. And we are going to be talking about how all of these processes filter into and channel into your business. We are talking on AM 1060 WMEL. This is the Talk to Me station, and we are talking today. By the way, if you would like to talk with us, we would love to hear from you. We'd be happy to take any of your questions about change, business, motivation. You can call us at 321-241-1060. That's 321-241-1060. If you have any comments or any questions about what we're discussing on Bold Talk Business Radio today or any other day, please give us a call. And again, that's 321-241-1060. We have an engineer standing by who can take your call, channel you right into us.
Speaking of change, I know that we had discussed earlier today on the way over here about instituting change in a business setting. How do you recommend a company institute change? I know that's not a big topic. It's a big subject.
Well, I think that the first thing we have to talk about is why we need to change to begin with. So sometimes in a business, you have forces that are outside the company that are just demanding that you do things differently if you want to be successful. Sometimes you just have a different vision. And so no matter which it is, whether the impetus for change is coming from the outside or the impetus for change is coming from the inside, there's a process that you should follow to make sure that you are hitting all the objectives and all the areas needed so that your change becomes a comprehensive effort. And the first thing that I would say about that is, first of all, remember that change is really the only constant. You know, the dinosaurs died because they did not change. So I really want to make sure that when we are focusing on a necessary change in our business, whether it's changing our technology, whether it's changing our people, whether it's changing the way we approach a process or changing our goals, that we have to really identify the challenge, basic reason behind the change. Like, what challenge are we dealing with that causes us to change? Nobody wants to change for no reason.
What's your process for managing this? This is a very difficult subject and can be something that can be a major difficulty for a company. So what's the process that you propose that you think is good?
Well, you know, as I said, the first place I would start is by identifying the challenge, because it's one thing, you know, if you're just saying, hey, I'm going to change my mind and I am the only person involved in that. But if you are looking to bring change to a company and you have 3 or 5 or 2 or 7 or 20 or 500 or 5,000 employees, the only way to get everybody aligned with your vision for change is to clearly articulate, clearly communicate your purpose, your needs, and the challenge itself. I think it's very important for people to understand the why we're making change, that we're not changing just simply to change and annoy people and, you know, toss things up. Sometimes, actually, that is a reason people change. Like, it's like building the pearl. You know, the pearl is built on that one irritant, that grain of sand that create something different around it. So if you want to create something different around it and you're going to irritate the people around you and get them moving, then to get them moving, you've got them to understand, you've got to make them, help them understand the why of an initiative so that they're more likely to buy in because they understand what's behind the need for the change and the work that goes along with that.
How complicated is pulling people together?
Getting people on board is a complicated process, and that's why I say there are six major steps. The first one I said is identifying the challenge. The second is to clearly articulate what it is you want to accomplish. The third is to clarify your specific objectives and to give the facts. For example, you want people to understand what's happening. So they need information before they can take action. They have to understand where they fit in the process. They have to understand what's happening. So for example, in New York, I worked with a bank, a major bank on Long Island and Queens, that was changing over all of its technology systems. Actually, it's a national bank. And I developed a series of newsletters for them leading up to the technology conversion so the tellers and the bank managers would know what was changing and what to expect. They need to know when things were going to happen, what kind of skills they were going to have to approach differently, how they were going to manage customers differently, what were they going to tell the customers as the conversion was rolling out, what to do in case of a glitch. So when people know what to expect, there's going to be less stress and anxiety around it. And listen to this, fewer mistakes on the job. Because when people don't know what to expect, you know, chaos is going to reign. So the more information you can give people, the fewer mistakes are going to be made during that time of change.
So the idea is to then clearly articulate exactly what's coming and what's coming for each individual. And that's the important point to get across in terms of part of the process for change.
Right. And not all changes are related to technology, but technology creates massive challenges on its own, and people really need to understand how to work with it. So for instance, the very week that I started working at Alston Corporation back in the 90s, they were rolling out a major system change. So the staffing services division was about to launch a new technology infrastructure, and my job was to communicate the plan that was going to ensure that everybody across a 350-person corporate office and 1,500 offices across the country understood what was going to happen and why it was happening, when it would happen, and what they needed to do before and after the conversion. So it's really important that people are apprised of their part in the process.
And you know, especially in a big company like that, the impact is going to vary depending on each individual position. So I think a company is important for a company to offer counseling to certain people in certain positions. In other words, some people may actually be losing their jobs. Some people may be changing their job. Other people may have new and more complex responsibilities. So this communication has to get down to a very precise level where you're actually ending up counseling individuals in terms of what the change will be. Is that part of the process?
Absolutely. You have to communicate during a change situation, a change event, and what we call change management. You have to communicate consistently. And that means, number one, be consistent in terms of frequency. Manage your information flow over time. Make sure that you're reiterating what you want people to know. It's like, be the broken record, keep the message going. But also, to make sure that people get the message, it's important that you send the message out in multiple ways to make sure that it is understood, seen as urgent, and that people respond the way that you need them to.
How do you, work with a team? How do you pull together a team to initiate this kind of change?
Okay, well, the first thing that you want to do, again, is to be very frequent with your communication. And it's important that people, first of all, get the message that a change has to happen or a change is happening if you want them to be comfortable with it. So, for example, last night I was working late in the middle of the night on a big project, and my internet went out, and I tried to log back into the browser, and I was getting a message from the cable company that they had made a technology change to the speed of my internet, and I now needed a new modem. Well, I couldn't get back into the system, and I called the help desk, and I said, "What's happening?" And they said, "Well, you've got to go down and pick up a new box, or we can deliver a new box to you, but not until Wednesday or Thursday." I said, "Well, I'm in the middle of a project. Why didn't I know about this?"
Well, that's where there's a breakdown in communication by this company. So then, and that's the kind of thing you want to avoid. You don't want to spring change onto people without this backup of communication.
Right. So what I was saying earlier about frequency and communicating consistently, that means that you need to think about how people, first of all, you have to walk the talk. If you want people to be happy, you've got to be making the changes along with them. You've got to be on top of the process. But you have to think about the fact that if you want to deliver a message to somebody, you need to know how they get their information and what they need in order to hear your message. And we're going to pick up on this again after the break, because we've only got about a minute left in this half of the show before we break for the news. So think about this. How many different ways do you need to deliver your message? If I didn't get that message because I missed a piece of paper in the mail that probably did come to me, then maybe they should have been thinking about sending me another letter, or communicating with me by email, or having a pop-up come up every time I went on the internet.
There you go.
So that I could get that message. Like, I should not have missed that message. And if I don't want people on my team to miss a message, or I don't want people in my family to miss a message, then I have to think about, how do I communicate in the ways that they need me to communicate so that they can hear what I am saying? And if you want to avoid a crisis of unhappy consumers like I was last night, or unhappy employees who feel like they were snookered in a change, then you've got to make sure that you're telling the whole story and they are getting it. So after the break, we're going to come back and we're going to finish more discussion on change management, because this is a very important topic. No matter where you are in your life, you can be guaranteed you are going to have to make a change. We'll be back after the break.
This is Bold Talk Business Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the CEO of Bold Marketing Solutions, Donna Anselmo.
Welcome back, listeners. This is Donna Anselmo and Pete Anselmo at Bold Talk Business Radio on AM 1060 WMEL. And in case you've never tuned in with us before, I want you to know that this is the show where we provide insights, strategies, tips, and tools for success every week. And in the first half of the show, before the news break, we were talking about change management and the process of adapting to change, the process of getting people involved and engaged in the change process inside a company. And if you think about it, you can follow the same strategy whether you're implementing a change in your family, whether it's your change of venue, you're moving, whether you have to change the people in your relationships in your family. Sometimes divorces happen. And what do you do? How do you manage that process? So we started out by saying in the last half that the first thing is you talk about the challenge, the problem that you needed to solve. You clarify what's important and why. You communicate consistently, use the same language, be frequent in the message that this change has to happen and why that change is important. You need to engage people. One of the things that we really didn't talk too much in the last half about, but we can talk about now, is how you engage different people in the process. So you've got other people involved. It's very difficult to change a circumstance that involves more than one person just by yourself.
You know, in a business, what I'm curious about is how do you keep people from being unhappy about the change? A lot of people have a resistance to change, and how do you prevent that sort of an attitude, which I think can be difficult in a business setting?
Well, I think that people are resistant to change to begin with because they don't know what the outcome of change is going to be. So typically the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. You don't know if you're going to sink or swim as a result of what's changing around you. And so you want to be able to help somebody to develop their comfort level with the change. And I think one of the most important ways of getting people comfortable with you is to let them know that they can trust you. Well, how does that happen? Trust is built over time. And so you need to, first of all, establish the right climate and culture in advance, if you can, so that you have a culture that can absorb the change and people who have already learned how to work together. But there are sometimes when a crisis happens and you've just got to dig in and you haven't had a lot of time to plan for it. So I think the most important thing, first of all, in building that climate and culture of people working together and trusting each other, is that you have to be honest, and you've really got to make sure that you're telling a story honestly. And I know that sometimes there are reasons, particularly when children are involved, where you have to kind of protect the innocent. But at the same time, in a business organization, it's really important that people have the information they need and that they know that they can rely on you to be telling them the truth. And this kind of ties in with not only change management, but with crisis management. And here's a great example of both. So I had worked for a big company during a major acquisition. And at the time, the acquiring company had told the shareholders of the company being acquired that no jobs were going to be cut if all those shareholders voted to approve the acquisition, and which was essentially framed as a merger. So that was one way that they got people on board. They said, hey, this change is going to be easy. Everything is going to be great. And nobody's going to lose their job. So, you know, just come along for the ride. We're going to be a bigger, better company. But just a few months later, the new company issued reams of pink slips. And many of the people who weren't let go at that time decided to leave anyway because the trust had been broken. And so it's really important, if you want people to stay the course with you, that you have to let them know that you have their backs. And the way that people know you have their backs is when they feel and they have seen that you are trustworthy and that you can be trusted to hold their back up.
Absolutely, because it carries over later and later. When you're working initially on the basis that you still have your job because and somebody else lost their job because these people, you know, lied to you, that doesn't exactly engender confidence in your employment circumstance. So it's not the right way to start a new conglomerate or a new company by having half the people upset and the other half gone, and that's not the basis for developing a good relationship.
Right. So communicating effectively and communicating consistently means walking the talk. You have to do what you say you're going to do. And you have to get the word out about that in enough different ways that people who need to get the message are going to hear it, understand it, and be able to appropriately act on it. And in essence, what you really want people to do is to embrace the change, because the people who don't really understand the merits of a change are not going to get on board. If they don't trust you, they're going to attribute all kinds of crazy motivation to what you're doing. They're going to tell themselves mental stories about how it's going to affect them, how it's going to affect the company, how it's going to affect the higher-ups in the company, the people below them, and the consumers. And the assumptions that they make when they don't have the facts and they don't have all the truth can be disastrous, because they can make assumptions and begin communicating them. And the communication that people make when there's a void in communication, when there's a void in the information flow, and they make up the story in their own minds, then they tell that story out, that is a significant impact on your brand and your brand story. And that is very, very important. You want to avoid that by making sure that you are telling the story honestly, and you are also getting the feedback. You had asked me earlier, Pete, about how do you get people engaged in a process for change?
So there is a process to this. In other words, this is just not out of the blue. There is a process for getting the people engaged. There's a process for making the change.
Right. So when you're going to, you know, you've got a big change coming, whether, you know, as I said, whether it's implementing a technology, whether it's planning a new division for your company, whether it's a shift in your business strategy, whatever that change that you're citing on your horizon, you have to start to plan what kind of information you want people to know, what are the facts, what level of information and accountability do people need to be able to help act on what you're doing, and how are you going to get that information out? So one of the best ways that I have seen major change implemented in big companies, and this can be done on a much smaller scale in small business, in a, you know, by pulling people together into one room, is to hold a town meeting, town meeting for your organization or your company, and give everybody there, everybody who's part of the organization, the opportunity to understand what's happening, to hear why it's important and why you need them involved. So you get your employees together and make them a part of the change process. Mike Maffetone, who was the CEO at University Hospital at Stony Brook, and I've spoken about him before because I thought he really was a visionary leader, he was starting a new quality focus and establishing a quality council for the hospital. Well, what does that mean when you're changing quality, okay? You're looking at what's being done. You know that things have to be done a certain way, particularly in a hospital where there are requirements. There are forces outside you who are going to accredit your hospital. And so you have to make sure that you are all buttoned up. So when he established a quality council, that meant many things were going to change in terms of who was in charge, what was happening, how problems were going to be resolved inside of different hospital departments. He held a series of town meetings, or basically assemblies, that brought hundreds of people together at one time to ask questions, get answers, and provide comments. And that comment piece is really important, because you must give people an opportunity to provide feedback during and about the change process. Number one, because it makes them feel engaged. Number two, because if you act on that feedback, they are engaged and they feel validated. And number three, because you might have missed something in your planning that your employees are going to point out for you.
I think what's important, what you just said, is that the company needs to take the feedback and to act upon it. In other words, this is not just a session whereby the company is expressing what's going to change, but you're there to receive feedback and to act on the feedback. It's a true town hall. In other words, when whether it be Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton goes to a town hall and says, well, I'm going to do this and that, they need to take that and do it. It's not just nonsense. In other words, the company needs to act upon the feedback that's given at the town hall.
People do not work in a vacuum, and that includes leadership. So if you want people to stay engaged with you, to continue to do valuable work for you, to continue to give you honest response and honest urgency and honest assessment of what's happening, they have to feel validated by the fact that you actually do what you say you're going to do in response to the feedback. A lot of times we say, well, we're going to take that under advisement. And as a business consultant, I see that all the time, because I can go in and work with people. Some people are very receptive to the feedback that they get from the outside source. And other times, people do not want the feedback because they only really want you to tell them what they wanted to hear to begin with. So it's important that if you take time, for instance, in marketing, if you take time in marketing to conduct a focus group, and the focus group comes back with information on products and product attributes that they want, and the company says, well, no, we're not going to do that, we don't think that's important. Well, guess what? Your customer just gave you great advice and you chose not to take it. So if they choose not to buy it, who is at fault there?
Exactly. And you know, what it comes down to, it's really a question of trust. It's a question that you've put out there, the company's put out there to the people, that this such and such is going to happen. And the people trust that that, in fact, is what it is. And they trust that when they say, well, I think maybe this approach might be a little better, that you take that into consideration. And any change or any direction for a company must involve trust by both the employee and the ownership.
When you have trust, you're going to be in a better position to get people to collaborate and to cooperate. And I use those words differently, by the way, because cooperation is about bringing people to the table. They will work with you on a process. They might help you identify things that need to be done. And they may volunteer or, accept employment to work with you on a particular area. But true collaboration happens not only when people bring words and bodies to a project, but where they also bring resources to a project. And those resources actually add to what you've got and help to benefit all the parties involved. So another one of my C words for change management, and I don't know if we really defined this earlier on, is six C's involved with change. I call them my six change words. Challenge, identify the challenge. Clarify the purpose. Communicate frequently. Well, here's another one of those C words. It's collaborate. It's get the people involved in the process that you want them involved in so that you can implement the change that you need. So for instance, in some cases, you've got a lot of control over what's happening because you are giving information out to your own employees, and your employees are beholden to you supposedly to do the work that you need done. Well, sometimes you might be working with different organizations to solve a problem, and these different organizations may have people that you've never worked with before. They may have a different vision. They may have a different value system. Very often when you're pulling diverse groups together, it's kind of like herding cats. So take an example. We're in Central Florida. It is almost June in a few weeks from now. June is hurricane season. So you've got hurricane season knocking on the door. You might want to be pulling together disaster managers from various organizations who are going to be figuring out how to work better together this year than last year. And assumedly, these people have been doing this process and not waiting until the last few weeks before hurricane season. I know all these disaster organizations work on this throughout the year. So how do you make that happen? When you look and you say, well, yeah, last year we didn't get all the sandbags out quickly enough, or we weren't able to serve as many families as we wanted, or we didn't get the news out. So how do you look at the process when you've got to get a lot of different organizations together? You want to be thinking about where those people are going to come from and planning in advance, but you're going to first start by noticing that something did not go right the first time. So when you notice that there is a process that needs to be improved, you can start to look at how you're going to make that change happen. And then again, you have to think about pulling the right people together into the right team so that everybody can work together and can bring their own resources to the table. So for instance, we started a new conversation many years ago when I was at Stony Brook University Hospital and became engaged with the Safe Kids Coalition. And the Safe Kids Coalition was an advocacy group for children. And so we had a coalition of partners who all had an interest in child injury prevention: doctors, nurses, emergency responders, the county executive's office, which had a DWI project. And I found out that the organization, Safe Kids, that I had been working with, had a budget at the time of $200. Now, they had a big vision. They wanted to prevent unintentional injury to children across the county. They had $200 in their budget, and they earned that by bake sales. And when they wanted to go out and do a community education forum, for instance, they begged money from the different medical practices at the hospital so that they could get out and go to a county fair or a hospital fair and at least have a presence out there to talk to families. So I realized that if we were going to make this work and we were really going to achieve the vision, we had to have resources and we had to figure out how we were going to get the resources to make that happen.
Is that another C word? You need the capital to get things going sometimes.
Absolutely. And the capital can come in the form of cash, but it can also come in the form of human capital, or, you know, operating budget or donations from people. Absolutely. But the human capital is really important. And in order to get people together, you need to, again, clarify the objective. So we started out by saying, what's the challenge in change? Identify the challenge. Well, in that case, the challenge was, you know what? We don't have enough money to accomplish the mission of this organization unless we change the way we're looking at how we're raising money. We cannot do it in the corridors of the hospital and have enough money to prevent serious injury to children on a serious level across a county. So the way that you have to do that is to start thinking differently. Well, how do you get people on board with that? The first thing is state the challenge. The second thing is communicate clearly what it is you need. So I said, we need money for grants. We need money. So let's pull together a grant application. That means we have to find sources of grant money. Where are they? Well, I asked that question at the table with all these doctors, nurses, county representatives. Within a week, I had a county person come back and say, hey, we have a solution. And the solution was that the county at the time had money in the budget, but they had a hiring freeze. So they were not able to use their own money to bring new people on, but their contract was available. They were able to use their money, just not for hiring. So they were able to contract with us. That brought $50,000 in that year. And we used it to hire somebody who came and worked with us. and spent the rest of the year cultivating more money. And over the next 4 years, we brought in about $400,000 additional dollars from another grant alone, plus other in-kind contributions. So it was really important to be able to engage people in the process. And there's so much process involved with managing change.
And I think one of the things that's important, particularly for small businesses that may not have, you know, all the resources available, is commitment. In other words, staying power is very important with respect to change. You can't simply institute or say we're going to change this week, and 2 weeks later, you know, it just slides by and nothing happens. People, you need a very serious commitment to making the change.
Absolutely. So once you know what change you want to make and you've committed to that, you've found a process that needs to be improved, you found a situation that needs to change, the next step is that you engage people. You find the people who can help with this process improvement, and you begin to gather data. You have to collect the data of what's happening so that you have indicators in enough measure that you can actually measure the change afterwards. You can say, yeah, did our intervention make a difference? And so that is really important, to know what you're trying to change and to be able to say, okay, well, we see these things are happening. What's behind it? So for instance, if you're in a hospital, you're in an emergency room and you need to change the throughput. You've got to be able to get people through with fewer medical errors and get them through more quickly. You've got to be able to first catalog how long it's taking to get people through the ER, or how many errors are happening, so that you know that your intervention was valid. When you have some understanding of the source of the variations influencing the, you know, time to get somebody through the ER, for instance, once you understand those variables, then you can begin to affect a plan to make that change and get that change going. We have to leave it here today, and we can pick up this topic of change management again, because it is so massive, and particularly the quality management piece of it. So we're going to come back next week. We're going to wish you a wonderful week, and come back next Tuesday to listen to more Bold Talk on Bold Talk Business Radio. Pete Anselmo, Donna Anselmo.
Good to be here.
Your show host. We've got another great show planned for you next week, and we're going to talk about how to make a great joint venture with another company. Listen next week. We'll see you then.